Welcome to the Fabric Podcast. As we turn the page to 2021, we wanted to share part of the conversation we were having almost 2 years ago, seeing ourselves and the people around us for the messy wonders that we all are.
Happy New Year. This is Greg Meyer with Fabric. Yeah, it's a different kind of New Year, isn't it? Rather than our typical resolutions about losing weight and exercising more, we're just sighing and saying, whew, made it. Yeah, it's been a brutal year. I have one friend who asked how soon it would be before we could finally start using 2020 as a swear word. I think that ship has sailed. Or I imagine coming back from the eye doctor and letting someone know that you found out you had 20/20 vision and they're saying, oh, geez, sorry, I hope they can fix that for you. Yeah, it has been a tough year. But it doesn't mean we don't have some hopes for 2021, even though I think our optimism is guarded and rightly so. One of the things that I think we realize is different is that what needs to change, the resolutions aren't just about our own personal lives. It's something that has to do with all of us, and we have to do it collectively. We do face a lot of changes in our world right now. We had a dramatic reminder this week when another person was killed by a police officer on Cedar Avenue, barely a mile away from where George Floyd was killed back in May. At the time of this podcast, we have no details, but we know that the grief and the hurt are going to be commingled with the hope and the aspirations for change, and that we as a community are committed to dealing with that mess in order to find the change that we need. Taking this kind of grief and hope and turning it into a revolutionary love that can change things is a vision that a woman named Valerie Kaur has that is worth listening to. It's a hard-hitting, not sentimental, whole self, all emotion kind of love, a revolutionary love that can bring about the sort of differences that we need as individuals and as a nation. I invite you to check out her book, See No Strangers, from One World Press. We're going to be looking at that starting next week to explore what that means for us and how we can be that kind of revolutionary love together. But to get us ready for that, we are sharing a pod recast this week of a message that I shared with our gathered community at the start of the new year in 2019. We were talking about four big decisions back then, four parts of our lives that we need to get figured out so that we are ready to deal with the onslaught of day-to-day decisions that happen to us way too fast for us to figure out where our grounding is and what our true self would have to do with those things. So I invite you to sit back and to listen to this big decision about relationships entitled, How Do I Deal With Others? Imagine yourself in a room full of people. That would require some imagination right now, wouldn't it? And to listen in on this.
Yeah, you probably have all heard the expression, or someone maybe has said it to you, that everything happens for a reason. I firmly do not believe that. It turns the world into this kind of gigantic puzzle, usually with God moving the things and like free will and everything all of a sudden disappears someplace. I mean, it seems to be like a comforting thing to say, but it just doesn't work. On the other hand, I do believe that everybody does things for a reason. In other words, you and I, we are all perfectly consistent according to some sort of operating system that we have going on inside of us, and we make our decisions and choices according to that operating system that we have chosen, or maybe that we didn't choose, that it's simply there. And that's kind of what we're talking about here with this month, talking about four big decisions. Like, what are these big decisions that we need to make so that they serve us as our operating system? So as we go through day-to-day life, we actually make choices that are consistent with the stuff that is actually really important for us. And one of the first things to know is that, you know, as I was saying, that people do what they do for a reason that they have chosen, on the one hand, a reason that they've chosen, hopefully, you know, chosen carefully, not just kind of picked out of the blue, but chosen because we bother to take the time to kind of do some soul searching and understand ourselves and how we're woven together with, you know, that which is beyond us, with God and with all people and all things around us. And we try to make our best choices and we create a foundation out of that, something that we've chosen. Or on the other hand, we do things according to something that we, these, you know, kind of foundational ideas that we have not chosen. I'm afraid, I think probably most people are on the not chosen side. I don't think we've actually really bothered to look inside and to figure out what we want to base our day-to-day decisions on. And so those not chosen things, you know, they come to us in a couple of ways. One way is that we simply inherit the what we do. You know, I grew up this way. My family always did it that way. I've never really thought about it, but I just inherited it, and so this is what I do. Or maybe it wasn't your family. Maybe it just was, you know, what happened at school, how things worked at school, or your closest friends. But you basically inherited it without really reflecting on it much. And it might be good, may not be so good. But the big point is it wasn't chosen. The other possibility is that it's kind of a bill of goods that got sold to you, right? You know, peer pressure. All the cool kids are like this, and so I'm going to do that because I want what they got. Or, you know, media does it to us, marketing and, you know, capitalism in its big evil way, whatever. But it, you know, tells us you want these things and you want to be motivated by this, and this is what life is all about. We get told that, and so it's sold to us, and that becomes our operating system. That determines our foundations. Another way that it happens is we just sort of stumble into it. Well, I was in a jam one time, and the path of least resistance to get out of it was just to do this. And it worked that time. I got out of the jam, so I tried it again and again. Before you know it, I had a well-worn path to always do that. And probably a synonym for that is called a rut. And so we get stuck in that. So one of the things to realize is that, you know, when I make this foundational choice, these big decisions out of, you know, looking inside myself and trying to understand who I am in the world and who I am in relationship with God, and I, you know, create this around my values, that big decision, that foundation was created out of internal things, right? It came out of inside of me. And all these other ways, whether you inherited it, whether it was sold to you, whether it was stumbled onto, those are all external. Things outside of you that, frankly, don't care a whole lot about you. They don't know you. They haven't evaluated you. Actually, in most of those cases, you are either not considered or you are just a resource to them. And they want you to do behave certain ways, to have certain things going on, certain motivations in your life because it serves them better. Now, I think it's pretty obvious which we want, right? I mean, we want to be motivated by things that come from inside of us, things that we really value, that are important to us and how we connect with the world. So I guess the point is, choose, please, all right? Don't be one of the people that just gets your values, your foundations thrown on you. Make a choice. Make a good choice. Learn what your choice means, all right? We evolve with it. We fix it. We rearrange it. We readjust to it. We understand the implications of it. Choose and continue to choose and continue to build on that. That's really, really big here. So that's kind of what we're talking about. But choosing is only one thing. That's, you know, we start a foundation, we build this foundation, but in order to continue to choose it day by day, that becomes kind of one of the big things. And that's why we talk about this, right? If you could just say, this is what you're supposed to do, and we all go do it, it'd be fine. But these are things that are hard for us to work on together. So we talk about it here, and we talk about it together. And today we're really diving into this area of relationships. What is a big decision about relationships? And I think of all of the ones that we're talking about, this is probably the most obvious. Most of us know the answer to this. Most of us aren't going to argue with it at all, so it should be just a done deal. The problem is it's like one of the most difficult ones to live out. And that big decision about relationships is that they are about we, not me. All right? My relationships are about we, not me. Seems so obvious. So hard. Now, when we talk about we, you know, there's a lot more that we'll never be able to touch on today, but we talk about we, like, I got to think of some of these different spheres of we's. First of all, you've got the personal, the interpersonal we's, like yourself and your partner, your spouse, your family members, maybe close friends, really close friends, people you work with real closely, all right? These personal relationships. Now, the thing about them is, like, these are people that you really like to know. I love having relationships with these people. The problem is, once you get to know that person well enough, all that stuff that was so cool about them, what does it become? Irritating, right? I mean, we get to know each other too well. I really liked you because you really added on to my life. And then I found out you actually expected something back from me. Or all those, you know, neat little things start becoming annoying. I mean, that's one of the things. We get to know each other so well that there's a lot of tension there. Then the next kind of group of people are these, I would call the impersonal ones, right? These are the people you interact with, you recognize, you might even know their names, but you don't really know them. It's the, you know, the grocery store checkout. It's those people in your office that you know who they are and you do a little bit of something with them, but you're used to mostly just seeing them kind of walk around and, you know, you don't know their lives at all, right? The thing with those people is relationships with them is pretty easy because there's very little expectations. But what we can do to those people is just kind of get immune to them. They become invisible. We expect them to just do their job, and I don't contribute it. I don't need to know. It's something kind of dangerous in that, you know, that to leave them there. But at the same time, it isn't your job, like, to have a deep and meaningful conversation with the person who sells you the Powerball tickets at Speedway. I mean, you can try, but it seems a little creepy. The next category are the strangers. This is maybe a kind of a tough word, but it's those people out there that, I mean, this is the billions, right? There's 7 billion people on the planet. Most of them do not fit in your personal or even your impersonal category. You just, like, don't know them. These could be people in your own hometown. I mean, it could be the homeless people that were camped out on Cedar and Hiawatha. It could be the uber wealthy. It could be, people that just, you don't get them. You don't know them. You don't know what's going on in their lives. It's very difficult to be empathetic with these people. Out of sight, out of mind with them, right? So, you know, well, gee, they should be in my Wii, but it's really hard. Can't they just sort of take care of themselves? And then the last category of we is the biggest one, and that's like all of the natural world. I mean, you are not only in relationship to people, we are in relationship with everything, with the animals, the plants, the bacteria, the rocks, the trees, you name it, right? Oh, that's just overwhelming, and we realize how complicated our relationship is with all these things, especially as we become a species that has such power to impact our planet and other species and things like that. So I'm probably going to be talking mostly on the more personal side today, but, you know, kind of realize how this also tips into some of those other areas. Okay, so like I said, unless you're total clod, you probably get the fact that this is, you know, relationships are about we, not me. You can name all the people in your mind who are those total clods. You're not one, I'm sure. But we all have struggled with this. But the problem is with this that despite what we might know, we all have a tendency to want our relationships to be about me. Just normal human thing. I mean, it's just so much easier than that. I mean, after all, I feel my pain. I only kind of can hear about yours. I don't feel it. So my pain trumps your pain. And, you know, so it's more about me. I have to stop. I have to empathize. I have to put myself on hold to appreciate things about you. So, you know, I have this intrinsic idea or inclination for my needs, for my relationships to be about me. And not only do I want my relationships to be about me, but I also, and I think this is key, I want the change that is needed in our relationship to be about you. All right? I want the relationship to be about me, but the stuff that's wrong with it, I want that to be about you. In other words, it's your job to fix it. Now, boy, that would be nice, wouldn't it? It's so much easier than having to do something for yourself personally to realize that, boy, I've got some stake in this and maybe some responsibility for it. We all want someone to blame. We talked about that a couple weeks ago. It's so much easier than, accepting the responsibility for the situation. Now, we can get away with that kind of relationship for a while, right? Relationship's about me. The responsibility for changing it is about you. And, you know, the nice thing is when that doesn't work, you can always opt out. And you can find someone else and try a relationship with someone else where it can be about you and the responsibility is on them. And when that one doesn't work, you just flip to another. There's a lot of people on this planet. You can just kind of keep opting out of relationships when they don't want to play into the scenario that is more convenient for you. It's 7 billion people. You can go through a lot of relationships before you finally run out of people to do it with. Yeah, obviously it's not going to work. I mean, sooner or later, we just get frustrated. Sooner or later, the disappointment, the loneliness builds up of not being able to have a relationship. And the problem is, like I said, you know, as you go along from one relationship that's all about you to the next relationship that's all about you, the problem is that you keep going with it each time, and you're going to bring the same problem with you every time, and you're going to keep doing that. So that's how we tend to look at relationships, but it isn't how relationships are meant to work. And so what we're talking about today, this big decision that we all need to make, all right? And we already named it. It's this, that relationships are about we. Decide it, all right? So I've got 5 little steps. These are the 5 easy steps on how to have a better relationship. Okay, I hate that kind of stuff too. But there are kind of 5 moves. And so I've just sort of laid them out and, you know, just as a way to kind of be thinking about it. But the first thing is just to decide it. I've got to decide this, that my relationships are about we, right? They're not about me. They are about we. It isn't about my needs. It's about meeting our needs. It's about something bigger, something greater, something that lasts, something that is worth the effort of figuring out how to make it work so that we can enjoy what happens with we. All right? many of you have been at a wedding where that passage from Ecclesiastes was read. It says, two are better than one because they have a reward for their effort. Kind of big words there, for their effort. That's right, relationships require effort. They are work. The neat thing is, they do have a reward for it, though. I mean, there's a benefit. There's something you can't have when you're not in relationship. So Paul, too, trying to help people understand this, the we-ness of relationships and how important it is, and obviously having to talk about it, even though people tend to know it, we tend to forget it. So he was hammering this home as people are trying to grasp it, and he said this. These are some words we've leaned on many times here as a community. He writes, just as there are many parts to our bodies, so it is with Christ's body. So it is with those who are trying to, you know, see the we of all things, right? Just as there are many parts to our body, so it is with Christ's body. We are all parts of it, and it takes every one of us to make it complete. For we each have different work to do. So we belong to each other, and each needs all the others. We are in relationships to meet our needs, not only mine. Everything about us is designed for being in relationship. As it said there, it takes every one of us to make it complete. The world, I mean, just look at the world. It is made up of complex systems of diverse parts in order to make it work. I mean, just think of ecosystems and all the ways that all the different, everything from the soil to the air to the plants to the large animals and to the microscopic things that all, we can start seeing some of the components, but the complexity of it is just beyond us to understand how it all works. I mean, it's the same among us as well. So you see, other people aren't only nice or helpful, they are necessary. As that line said, each needs all the others. Maybe you work in an office like this, you know, there's the managers, then you've got the accounting, then you've got the engineers, and then you've got the sales force, and all of them kind of like shake their heads, roll their eyes about the others, like they don't really get it, and they're annoying to work with, and, you know, we kind of put up with each other. That's one reality of most workplaces and all these different groups. Another reality is none of them would have a job without all the others. So there's this complexity of being in those relationships with each other. Martin Luther King Jr., what he did about civil rights was all about what we're talking about today, right? He was calling us to a bigger understanding of we. Even as subgroups, we start treating us as, well, can't we be the privileged people? Can't we be the me, all right? And you all just be you. And he says, no, we all have to be we. Listen to this quote from him. We must all learn to live together as brothers, or we will all perish together as fools. We are tied together in the single garment of destiny, caught in an inescapable network of mutuality. And whatever affects one directly affects all indirectly. For some strange reason, I can never be what I ought to be until you are what you ought to be. And you can never be what you ought to be until I am what I ought to be. This is the way God's universe is made. This is the way it is structured. We need to make this conscious decision that calls on our better selves to claim the we. So decide that it is we, right? Decide that it is we, and then the next one is admit it, all right? There's something to admit, and that is that the change in my relationship starts with me. Change in your relationship starts with you, starts with me. Now, it starts with me. It doesn't end with me. It ends with us because it's a relationship, right? But it begins with me. Now, there's only one thing in my control, and that's me. I can manage you. You know, I can berate you, I can manipulate you, I can persuade you, and by doing that, I might get the result I want for a little while, and you'll cooperate, and you'll let the relationship be about me and my needs, you know, really well, but sooner or later, that's not going to work, is it? I mean, sooner or later, that reach doesn't have the same influence on the person anymore. Why? Because you're not really understanding who they are, you're not helping the relationship meet their needs. Sooner or later, the person's going to say, you know, I think I've had enough of this, I can't do that anymore. So change needs to start with me. Now, how does that happen? So you decide it, you admit that the change needs to start with me. So how are you going to start sharing this change with each other? And that's the next piece, and that is to imagine it, right? So decide it, admit it, imagine it. Imagine, share the change like Jesus did by sharing a vision, not rules. Share the change by sharing a vision, not rules. You see, you don't change a relationship by just like saying, okay, this is how it's going to be. You're going to do this, I'm going to do that. Or simply, you know, telling them this is what you've been doing wrong, and so this is what you're supposed to be doing. Now, you do it by giving them a picture of what it could be like. I said doing it like Jesus did. Yeah, I think he was quintessential. I mean, he got this so well, and that is how he operated. The Bible is full of rules, I realize that. But what was Jesus' role among all those rules? I mean, he was the one who was always trying to get people to back, like, forget the rules. I mean, don't forget them, but let's have a new relationship with what these words are all about, right? Understand where it's calling you. I want to help you see the big picture of this so it isn't just doing what you're supposed to do, but you're doing what, like Martin Luther King said, you're operating the way God's universe really works, the way it's really structured. And so, like, take example, time after time. The example, it's from the Gospel of John, the 8th chapter. So Jesus is in a village in the marketplace, and all these people start, the elders of the village, male elders of the village, drag this woman who was caught in adultery and throw her on the ground in front of Jesus and say, what are you supposed to do? The law says we're supposed to stone her to death. What do you say? And Jesus just sits there and scrolls on the ground. And, you know, I'm cutting to the chase on the story, but basically finally just says, well, no, whoever is without sin, go ahead and throw the first stone. And they all start dropping their stones one by one. I love the story. It says, beginning with the oldest, the ones that could realize that. And so when everybody is finally gone, Jesus looks at this. He's squatting on the ground. He stands up. He looks at this woman, who I'm sure is just cowering on the ground waiting to be killed, and says, well, who's left to condemn you? And she looks up and says, no one. And he says, neither do I. Go, sin no more. Unpack that word sin. Go, and sin isn't a thing you do wrong. Sin is separation, the stuff that breaks us from one another, the stuff that turns our we with all things into me or into whatever kind of painful, broken version of that could be. Go and don't live that way anymore. Weave your life. What did he do? He didn't give her a list of rules. Okay, this is how you're supposed to do it. I made a deal with everybody, and I promised them if you do this and this and this and don't do that and that and that, they'll let you off this time. No. He just gave them a vision of what would a world look like that wasn't about judgment. A world that was about love and compassion. A love that was about calling people to a different place, a bigger place. And she experienced that, and she was changed. Another thing is you think about, well, what was Jesus famous for saying? Jesus, like, over and over was saying, the kingdom of heaven is like. The kingdom of heaven is like. The kingdom of heaven is like. He wasn't telling them what they're going to experience someday when they die. We talked about this last week. When Jesus talked about the kingdom of heaven or the kingdom of God, he was talking about this. When God gets present here with us right now, this is what it looks like. So the kingdom of God is like a mustard seed. You can barely notice it, but you plant it in the ground and it grows up and it becomes a home for many, many animals and birds. Or the kingdom of God is like yeast. You know, you put a little bit of it in this with a flour and you mix it with some water and suddenly it covers a whole loaf and makes the whole thing grow and turn into this wonderful food. Or the kingdom of God is like a treasure that got hidden in a field. And someone knew it was there, and so they did everything they could to buy that field. Or it's like a pearl. A pearl is so precious that a person did everything they could to own it because of its beauty. Or the kingdom of God is like a shepherd who lost just one sheep and was tireless, kept looking and looking until he found that one thing that was lost. Or it's like a father whose son had left, and he waited and waited and waited and went running to him as soon as there any chance they could have him back. Jesus painted a picture. He gives a vision of what life could be like to call us forward. So share change like Jesus did, sharing a vision, not rules. And a little bit, I want us to experience how this draws us in, but I want you all to take a little time. You'll find on your Sunday paper, there's a couple of gray circles there. And what I'd like you to do is reflect about a vision for a relationship that could use some work in your life, all right? And to think about what would a vision for that relationship be like. But before you do that, let me say one more thing about it, okay? And that is, when you're visualizing this, remember to visualize a changed relationship, not the changed person. When I think about a relationship that needs some work, and how it could be different. You know what I think about? I think about you and how you could be different. But that's all, like, so the relationship could be about me, right? Now, that's not going to work. Visualize the changed relationship. What would it look like? You say, well, how would I know, Greg? I mean, like, how would I know what that relationship would look like? And I said, well, you know. Let me tell you how you know. You know someone that you love to spend time with, because when you are with them, probably the way you say it to yourself is, I can just be myself. I don't have to play any games. I don't have to pretend. This person is always interested in me and affirming to me, and I can just be in their presence so easily. I can just be my true self with them, right? That is a renewed relationship. How can you be with this person, this troubled thing, so that both you and that person could be there without the games, without the pretending, without the competition, without the comparison, and you both could be there with the permission to bring your full self? Think about how that would apply to that relationship that you're imagining. Maybe it's something at home, maybe it's something at work, maybe it's with one of your friends, maybe it's something at school, maybe it's with one of your teachers. Okay, so go ahead and just take, can be a project for you this week, but take a couple minutes and start making a couple of notes in that first gray oval there about what that relationship might like, and I'll bring you back in just a minute. Okay, I'm going to cut you off right now, but keep making some notes and spend some time with it this week. Our homework practice is really about all that. So you decide it, you admit it, you imagine it, and now it's time to be it. So you share your vision of the renewed relationship by being it, not explaining it, okay? Explaining it is a rules. I have this renewed vision of what our relationship could be like, so I want you to sit down and I'm going to tell you how it's going to work from now on. Typically not well received, all right? On the other hand, what if you just started doing it? If you wanted this relationship to be at work or school or whatever, it's where my true self can show up and I leave space for your true self, how can I just start living that way right now? I'm going to bring my true self no matter what, and I'm going to keep making room for your true self no matter what. Now, if you start doing that, will the person automatically start playing their role the way they're supposed to? Probably not, especially, you know, the further off that relationship has gone from where it could be, it's probably going to be all that much harder for that kind of response to ever happen. But my guess, my experience is, if you persist with that long enough, you're going to really start making that other person wonder what's going on. Like, because you're behaving in ways that don't fit the rules that both of you thought you had for that relationship to this point. Suddenly you're behaving according to a bunch of different rules. And they're going to, you're going to puzzle the crap out of them. They're not going to know what's going on. And chances are they're going to ask you sooner or later, like, okay, what goes here? And now when they ask you that, you get the chance to put some words on it. And there are a couple options here. Option number one is you're going to say, boy, it took you a long time to notice. Yeah, I've been like busting my butt trying to be a better person in this relationship, and you haven't done anything yet. Now, here's what you need to do. I don't recommend that option. I recommend the other option. Their option is saying, taking a moment to kind of own it and say, yeah, I have been working hard at being different in this relationship. I just kind of realized after a while that the way this was working wasn't really working, and it made me really start looking at myself and who I've been in this relationship and realizing, like, I really haven't been giving you the respect, or I haven't really been doing my part, or I haven't really been allowing you to be you in this relationship. And so, yeah, I've been trying to do some things differently. I mean, where would that go? What might that change? It doesn't have to change anything. I mean, you're doing your part because that's what your job is to do. That's what you're called to do. But I would be surprised if it doesn't start melting a heart and moving someone else in that direction too. So we talked about deciding it, admitting it, imagining it, and being it. And then the work begins to maintain it. And unfortunately, I have to let you all know, relationships require maintenance, okay? Yeah, they do. I mean, would be nice if they don't, but they do. And it's because we're bringing, you know, two really different people together. And there's another, you may have noticed there are kind of two blanks there. Maintenance is the second one. The first one is the word regular. Relationships require regular maintenance, all right? So if you're thinking, yeah, I know relationships take work, maybe every couple of years, I'm going to address that. I'm sorry, you just lost. It's not yearly. It's like daily or sometimes even more often. These are the sort of things we need to keep in front of ourselves all the time. The truth is the wear and tear of our busy lives and our own individual experiences make it hard to keep on the same page with each other. You know, no big deal. It's just small stuff we think sometimes. But, you know, this is it. I mean, if you think about two slightly divergent lines, all right, two slightly divergent lines, just 1 degree apart from each other, as they start progressing, like the difference between them, the gap between them is so little, it's like, why bother? It's not a big deal, right? But if you keep drawing those lines, sooner or later, those lines have gone so far apart that by the time the gap between the two catches your attention, it is no longer an insignificant little crack. It has now become an insurmountable canyon, a chasm. And you neither have the skills nor the will to overcome that. You need regular maintenance. We need to check in with those situations on a regular basis. So what I have there is that you don't need to have a perfect relationship. There is no such thing as a perfect relationship. A perfect relationship would be where the two people are exactly identical, so they always made the same choices, had the same motivations, and that is called redundancy. I mean, that wouldn't be a relationship anymore. Why do you need the other person? They're just you again, all right? No, the reason that we're attracted to each other is that we each bring something different to the table. We bring different skills, we bring different insights, we bring different needs, and that's what makes it so wonderful. That's why there's a reward for our effort, all right? There's no such thing as a perfect relationship. So we don't need that. What we do need is a reset rhythm, all right? We have to realize as we grow apart, which you will grow apart, you bring all this, just the wonderful stuff you experience every day, you got to bring that back together, right? So you grow apart, come back together, grow apart, come back together. How do you create that reset rhythm in those relationships? How do you do it in a way that is, you know, daily, that is maybe even hourly, so that you can keep on top of it? Here's a really, really old words from the book of Deuteronomy. In the earliest days of Israel, when they knew they had something precious as a people but didn't even quite know what it was yet, and they're wandering through the wilderness with it, right? They have this, and no need to memorize it, but remember this. It was really, really important to Israel. I think it's really, really important to what we're talking today. The words are these. You shall put these words of mine. We've been hearing that these last weeks, right? These words. You shall put these words of mine in your heart and your soul. How are you going to put them in your heart and soul? That's where we want them, right? How are you going to keep them in your, how are you going to maintain them in your heart and soul? You shall bind them as a sign on your hand and fix them as an emblem on your forehead. Write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates. Sounds a little drastic. I mean, you know, writing we on the back of your hand, but hey, wouldn't that be pretty effective every time I point my finger at you and say, you need to, oh, yeah, right, we. It isn't you, it isn't me, it's we. You know, bind it on your forehead. That would do the trick. I mean, why is everybody looking at me so weird? Oh, that's right, I had we tattooed on my forehead, yeah. You know, okay, so that's a little drastic. I'm not expecting you to do that. But write it on your doorpost of your house or on your gate. So as you're coming and going, you're constantly reminded. So the point is, how are you going to constantly remind yourselves of these fundamental, these big decision things that so they are always there, so as you make the day-to-day difficult decisions at times when you don't have the energy, you don't have the calm, you don't have the presence of mind, but you've got those reminders there that keep you on target and you make the decision that's consistent to what's important to you the most. When I do premarital stuff with couples, probably a lot of you here gotten married by me have heard me talk about this, but probably the only piece of advice, I try not to give advice, the one piece of advice I give every couple is that you should have a weekly couples meeting, a time that you set aside to sit down together and get out some neutral territory, get away from the home and all that baggage, go someplace you both enjoy, and for an hour, hour and a half, all you're going to talk about is your relationship, like what's going on. I could give you a long speech of why, how that diffuses so many of the inherent problems we have as two people trying to bring their lives together that closely and keeps things on a steady course. It creates a reset rhythm. How can you do that at work? How can you do that with your friends? How can you do that with your neighbors in all these different places? A bricklayer is, you know, putting the bricks down. They start on the foundation, right, on the big decision, and they add layer and layer of bricks. And in order to not gradually have that, you know, getting off center so that it tips over and falls down, they do two things. One is they put a string of line real tightly across it to make sure they're straight, and then they either use a plumb line or they take a level and put it up on the side to make sure it's going up and down straight, okay? You know, what does that have to say about I'm building on my foundation, but I want to make sure I'm saying I have a reset rhythm. I have something to compare it to. I have something that reminds me if I'm getting off. Or you're driving down a freeway, right? An unfamiliar freeway. You're in Los Angeles and there's a trillion exits and a trillion cars. And how am I going to know? I know I have to turn here somewhere, but there's all these choices. So miles ahead, what do? They put up signs saying in 2 miles, you know, these are the exit only lanes. There's reset rhythms, something that reminds you, that helps you check in with what is my destination, how I be prepared in order to continue on my destination. So another short exercise, I'm going to let you just do this again on the other little oval there, is how will I keep my choice for we before me? What would be a practice that you could institute on that relationship that you were imagining before? They would say, this could be a daily, hourly, weekly, whatever practice that I would use to keep the we alive in that relationship.
Back to 2021 here. You know, keeping that we alive is critical to what we all need to accomplish together this coming year, both individually and as a society. We're going to be talking about that in terms of seeing no strangers in the coming weeks. When there's no strangers, there's only us. That's something to build our lives on. It's a big decision to make. It's something that can create the future we need.
It's worth keeping this conversation going. Share this podcast with a friend and find discussion resources at fabricmpls.com. You can also go to our contact page or reach out on social media to share your feedback and experiences, because Fabric isn't an organization sharing novel ideas. It's a community of people becoming more deeply woven. Thanks for being part of it.